From Hollywood, it's Dreamtime. Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Dream Shampoo are pleased to present the 14th in a series of new programs produced by Carlton Alsop and starring Don Ameche.
Let me sleep, will you, Blanche?
Frances Langford.
I just can't stand that snoring.
And Danny Thomas.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say I'm sorry I couldn't be with you last week, and may I take this opportunity to express my sincerest thanks to a great guy who pinch hit for me, Red Skelton. And by the way, where's our host? Oh, Donald Ameche.
Hi, Larry. Glad to see you back.
Thanks, thanks. By the way, Don, I listened last week. I heard you tell Francis that during my spare time I was a babysitter, and I resent it.
Well, do you deny it?
No, I just resent it.
You know, Danny, you'd get much better jobs if you learned to make friends quickly.
But how?
Well, be neighborly. The philosophy is to walk up to even a total stranger, throw your arms around him and say, let's be friends.
Yeah, I did that the other day and I got slugged.
Why?
I don't know. It just doesn't seem to work on girls.
You know, Danny, I think your problem lies in the fact that you're ignorant of the social graces. How much schooling have you had?
I went to school for 3 years.
Oh, well, I went to school for 14 years.
Well, some people learn faster than others. Don, if I had my choice, I'd have gone to Vassar.
Oh, Danny, Vassar is devoted to girls.
What do you think I'm devoted to, ducks?
Now, Danny, you know, schooling isn't enough. To be a true gentleman, one must have a background of generations of culture.
Mr. Ameche, it may interest you to know that I have an Anglo-Saxon genealogy.
Are you sure?
How can I be sure? I don't even know what it means.
I thought so. You see, Danny, if you're going to make friends, you must avoid making embarrassing social errors. For instance, now, the last time you were at my house, you finished dinner and you put your feet on the table.
Oh, now, wait, Don.
Well, you did, didn't you?
Well, I did put my feet on your table, but I took my shoes off first. I mean, you're just trying to embarrass me, that's all. Look, I know all about that etiquette stuff, like when you take your girl to a pool room, you're supposed to let her shoot first. You're not kidding me.
If Emily Post is listening, you're making the best years of her life the worst.
What am I supposed to do, eat chewing gum with a knife and fork?
We'll talk about that later. Right now, Frances Langford will sing, You Can't See the Sun When You're Crying.
You can't see the sun when you're crying. A tear can hide the brightest sky of blue. You can't hear a song when you're sighing, no matter how the birds sing for you. Suppose you make believe your eyes were cloudy windowpane, I'm sure you'd clean them up to look for rainbows when it rains. You can't see the sun when you're crying. So smile and let the sun shine when it rains. You can't see the sun when you're crying. Just smile and let the sun shine through.
Never before dreamed.
What? Never before dream?
No, never before dream could any shampoo reveal all the natural brilliance of your hair. Never before dream could any shampoo leave your hair so lustrous yet so easy to manage. Dream your hair and you bring out all its sparkling highlights. Dream your hair and you glamorize all its soft, thrilling texture. Drain your hair and you remove all luster-dulling soap film and unsightly dandruff. And what's more, Dreen's rich whipped cream lather leaves your hair easier to set, easier to curl, easier to arrange right after shampooing.
So for lovely, lustrous hair and for all types of hair, use Dreen shampoo.
Right. Never before Dreen could any shampoo leave your hair so lustrous, yet so easy to manage. D-R-E-N-E, Dreen shampoo. Say, Frances, Elsa Maxwell's having an old-fashioned bundling party tonight. Do you want
to
come?
Oh, I'd love to.
Hey, could I come?
I said bundle, no loose packages.
Oh, he can come, can't he, Don?
I guess so, but I hope he doesn't embarrass us.
What do you mean?
Well, he thinks he's a social lion. He doesn't even know which part of the olive to throw away.
Maybe I don't, Don, but let me tell you something. I don't need culture. You can have your etiquette, and I don't want to be a member of Cafe Society. Who wants to drink coffee from a demitasse?
Well, what's wrong with coffee in a demitasse?
Nothing, but did you ever try to dunk a donut in that small cup? Don, I'm afraid classy living is not for me. I was meant for the more horrible things in life, like drinking coffee from a coffee cup. And who cares whether I go to your party? 2-1, they'll serve turkey. And who cares for turkey? If all the turkeys in the world were laid end to end, that's the part I'd get. I'm satisfied to have my dinner where I have it every night, at a hot dog stand called the Heroic Lunch. You just stand up and take it. Who wants to be tied down to tradition? In society, one must tub every day.
Hooray.
It's all right. I like to tub, but if there's no hot water, I basin.
Well, you know, just as well you don't go to the party, Danny. You are definitely not a member of Cafe Society, and the girls would find you very dull.
Oh, they would, huh?
Yes. These ladies of society have a very high IQ.
So what's an IQ? As far as I'm concerned, an IQ is something you look for in a girl after you've looked at everything else. There's one thing that bothers me. Am I such a social outcast because I'm not a member of Cafe Society? Is it such a big thing to go to Ciro's or Macambo's every night? After all, what is a Hollywood nightclub? Want to know? I'll tell you. It's a place where a table of people from Toledo look over at a table of people from Milwaukee and say, gee, these movie stars look just like the folks back home. Culture. Etiquette. There's such a thing as being too proper.
Oh, come now, Danny. You're exaggerating.
You don't believe me, huh?
No.
Now, Mr. Amici, I shall prove my point. Exhibit A.
Did you ever hear the story of Swanky Bill? If he weren't so ultra, he'd be living still. Why, when he smoked a cigar, people used to say he had more class than the fellow who threw it away. He had lots of dash when he flicked that ash. Now Bill retained his manners and his cultured air, although he thought the judge's verdict quite unfair. He gave him 7 years, but William wasn't grim. He was so polite, he asked the judge to pardon him. What a well-bred lad. What finesse he had. Now when he got out, he met up with the social crowd. And he was never vulgar or uncouth or loud. And with his attire, he was so genteel. He wore the very smartest jewels a man could steal. He was really great, with such perfect taste. While dining with a duke, from whom he stole a G, he raised his little finger when he drank his tea. And as a result, poor William died. Because the tea wasn't tea, it was cyanide. He was so well-bred, but he's awfully dead. That's the end of Exhibit A. Exhibit B.
I shall never forget the party I attended, given by Lady Nelson in honor of her daughter, Half Nelson. It was a sultry night, and I was on the terrace, smoking a cigarette in a dinner jacket. I don't know why a cigarette should be in a dinner jacket. But that's society for you. Suddenly, a woman notices me.
Hello there. My name's Patricia.
Mine's Daniel. Nice meeting you and all that sort of rot.
Oh, I don't believe we've ever met before.
Hardly. I've been traveling. The Far East.
Oh, was it interesting?
The Far East? Oh, yes. Full of Far Easterners, you know. Yes, I spent 3 years at the American Hotel in Shanghai.
Why, how extremely weird. How did you ever manage with the food shortage over there?
Ingenuity, my dear, ingenuity. I had a cow in my hotel room.
How could you get a cow in your hotel room?
We registered as Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, it sounds simply fabulous, old boy. By the way, are you married?
Oh, yes. Charming girl. Charming.
Anyone I might know?
I doubt it. Don't know her myself.
Come now, of course you know her.
No, really. I married her on an impulse. You see, her pater pulled a gun on me.
Her pater?
Yes, her mother, you know.
Oh, you're terribly fascinating. Oh, I wager you're the type who likes to sit around the house with a pipe.
That's right.
Oh, you're a dreamer?
No, a plumber.
Oh, how droll. I meant the kind of pipe from which a man draws dreams. The material for smoke rings.
Oh, but I can't blow smoke rings.
Why not?
Square mouth.
Sir, you're pulling my leg.
How else can I get them even?
Excuse me, Lady Patricia, but this man is obviously insulting you.
Oh, no, I was just being gay. You see, my friends call me a buffoon, a jester.
You, sir, are boorish, crass, overwhelmingly illiterate, and completely repugnant.
How much of that is good?
Please leave these premises now. See to it that my political friends in England, France, Italy, the Netherlands, and the Balkans forbid you to enter that country. Now, what have you to say?
How are things in Glacamora? Now, the moral of the story, and there must be a moral, seems to evade me, but let's not quarrel, for we have a delightful surprise for you. We're gonna talk about the wonders of Dream Shampoo.
Not 50%, not 75%, but 100%.
Yes, Dream Shampoo reveals 100% of the natural beauty of your hair. All its sparkle, all its sheen, all its dazzling brilliance.
Right. Never before Dream could any shampoo leave your hair so lustrous.
That's because Dream is not a soap shampoo. Leaves no dull film, as all soaps do. And what's more, Dream does not dry out your hair. Instead, Dream's richer whipped cream lather leaves your hair easier to set, easier to curl, easier to arrange right after shampooing.
So for lovely, lustrous hair, use Dream shampoo.
Yes, for all types of hair, dry, normal, or oily, use Dream shampoo. Buy Dream at all drug department or 10-cent stores in the familiar blue and yellow package, or ask for Dream at your beauty shop. Remember, never before Dream could any shampoo leave your hair so lustrous, yet so easy to manage.
Yes, your hair can have that dazzling sheen the very first time that you use Dream.
Right. Your hair can have that dazzling sheen the very first time that you use Dream. Lovely dream girl, Frances Langford, with Carmen Dragonetti's orchestra, sings There Is No Greater Love.
Heart so true. There is no greater thrill
than what you bring to me. No sweeter song than what you sing to me. You're the sweetest thing I have ever known, and to think that you are mine alone. There is no greater love in all the world, it's true. No greater love than what I
and Francis Langford as John and Blanche Bickerson in The Honeymoon is Over, written by Phil Rapp. The Bickersons have retired. Mrs. Bickerson lies tense and awake in the darkness as poor husband John, victim of a rare type of insomnia which keeps the patient in a complete lethargy for 8 hours at a time, offers valid proof of his agonizing affliction. Listen.
This has been going on since 9 o'clock. Oh, please, not that again. John! John! Quit it!
Quit it, Blanche.
John! There must be something that'll put a stop to that hideous snoring. Why do you do it?
Do what, Blanche?
Snore. Snore!
Okay.
John! I'm going out of my mind. For years, you've been telling people you've got insomnia. And you not only sleep like a log, but you sound like you're sawing it.
Very funny.
It isn't funny, it's tragic. There's the clock again. 2 o'clock. I've counted that thing chime 45 times since we went to bed, and I still haven't slept.
Well, how do you expect to sleep? You're going to lie there counting chimes. Throw the darn clock out. It's keeping me awake, too.
You wouldn't wake up if we had Big Ben in the room.
Big Ben who?
I'm a nervous wreck. I've got crow's feet around my eyes. My forehead's all wrinkled. My chin is sagging. Yeah. I'm beginning to look like an old hag. It's true, isn't it?
I wouldn't say that.
Why not, John?
I'll be awake for the rest of the night.
You do think it's true, though, don't you?
What's true?
I'm beginning to look like an old hag.
You are not beginning to look like an old hag.
Why do you emphasize beginning?
All right. You're not beginning to look like an old hag.
That sounds even worse.
Well, how do you want me to say it?
Say I look beautiful.
Okay, I look beautiful. Good night.
Oh, I don't know how a man could be so cruel. Is it any wonder I'm getting old before my time?
What time is it?
It's after 2 o'clock and I haven't slept a wink.
Well, go to sleep.
You can't stand the sight of me, can you, John?
I can stand it fine.
Before we were married, you used to say such beautiful, poetic things. You don't anymore.
Oh, well, Blanche, how do you expect me to feel poetic at 2 o'clock in the morning?
You used to feel that way at 3 o'clock before we were married. Say something poetic.
Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great
fall. Oh, stop it. You're just trying to irritate me now.
Well, what do you want me to say?
You know what I want you to say.
Okay. Blanche, when I look into your eyes, time stands still. Are you satisfied?
No.
Well, why not?
That might also mean I have a face that would stop a clock.
Well, if the shoe fits, wear it. I want to get some sleep.
You're not going to make me believe I'm hideous and ugly, John Dickerson. Huh. It isn't so long ago I won a beauty contest in my hometown.
Long enough.
I never hear you tell any of your friends about it.
Oh, Blanche, a man can't go around telling his friends that his wife was Miss Clam Harbor Lighthouse of 1931.
You make it sound as though I were the only girl in the contest. What about my sister, Clara?
What about her? Plenty. You won it, didn't you?
I'd like to hear you talk that way about Gloria Gooseby.
Oh, now, don't start with Gloria Gooseby.
The way you drool every time you look at her, you'd think she was Miss America.
I don't drool when I see anybody. I hate Gloria Gooseby.
Then why do you keep inviting her here to dinner?
I didn't invite her. You did.
Don't change the subject. If it weren't for the fact that her husband Leo is such a nice person, I wouldn't have either of them in the house. And the dinner was awful.
Well, you cooked it, Blanche.
Yes, but the thought of that horrible Gloria Gooseby coming to dinner got me all confused and it ruined everything. The minute I turned my back, the roast caught on fire and I had to throw soup on it to put it out.
You should have thrown that pie on it, too.
There was nothing wrong with the pie.
I hate lemon meringue and you know it.
It wasn't lemon meringue, it was apple pie.
Well, what was that yellow stuff on top?
The crust got burned and I had to put some unguentine on it.
Thank heaven I didn't eat any.
No, but your girlfriend stuffed herself with 4 pieces, the glutton.
She is not my girlfriend, and quit talking about her so I can get some sleep.
You wouldn't look at her twice if she didn't wear those brazen dresses.
I would, too. I mean, I don't care what she wears.
It's a shame Leo has such a little mouth. Believe me, if I were Gloria Gooseby's husband, I'd show her a thing or two.
Mm.
Somebody ought to turn her over and give her a good spanking.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're thinking, John Bickerson.
I'm not thinking anything. Why don't you let me sleep, Blanche?
I'm not going to stand for it much longer, John. Ugh. You keep putting on that innocent attitude, but you don't fool me. I wouldn't feel so bad, except I'm so sick I could die.
What's the matter now?
I'm sick. I get fainting spells all the time, and the doctor doesn't know what it is. I know I'll never recover.
Oh, don't be silly. You'll recover. You've got a healthy constitution.
Well, I have not.
You have, too. You had pneumonia and you got well. You had the flu, you got well. You had the mumps, you got well. You've had 60 diseases and you always got well. Never saw such a healthy woman in all my life.
Well, what about these fading spells?
You'll recover from those, too. But if you ever get lockjaw, you'll bust. Why don't you faint now so I can sleep?
Of all the unsympathetic, unfeeling wretches, if you ever lost me, it wouldn't mean a thing to you.
Oh, wouldn't it, though?
Well, you don't have to sound so eager.
I'm not eager. I'm just sleepy.
It's a good thing we don't have any children. I can just imagine what kind of a life a poor little child would have in this house.
Mm.
To have a father who constantly raves and rants, selfish and thoughtless, a man who can't bear the sight of his own child.
What are you talking about?
Me sick in bed and the poor little infant crying in his crib, crying his heart out for a little attention.
Blanche.
Why don't you feed the baby, John?
Baby.
John, why do you hate children so much?
Because I can't bear them.
I know, but why do you hate them?
Blanche, all you want to do is keep me awake. Isn't that right?
You'd have been asleep long ago if you hadn't kept me awake with your snoring.
Well, can I help it if I snore?
Yes, you can. Dr. Marvin tells me there's something wrong with your nasal passages.
Yeah.
He says you have a deviated septum. Why don't you let him fix it?
Okay, I'll have it fixed next week.
You say it, but you won't do it. Let him fix it now.
What?
Go on, get up and let the doctor pull out your septum.
Blanche, are you out of your mind? You think I'm going to let that broken-down doctor hammer on my nose at 3 o'clock in the morning?
He doesn't hammer on your nose. He chisels.
You can say that again. I've seen his bill.
Well, you're going to have to do something. As it is, neither of us get any sleep.
Why don't you have him sew up your ears?
We wouldn't argue at all if you'd just be a little nice for a minute.
You've been up to something again, Blanche. What is it?
I haven't been up to anything. I just want to hear you tell me you love me, that's all.
Well, you know I do.
You never say it.
Oh, I say it all the time.
Say it now.
I love you.
How much do you love me?
How much do you need?
$50.
Oh, now, wait a minute,
You
Blanche.
Promised me, John.
I know, but I can't give you anything extra this month.
That's what you told me last month.
Well, I kept my word, didn't I? Now, what do you want $50 for?
The rent.
Oh, the rent is right here. It's in the cookie jar.
No, it isn't.
This, too. I looked there yesterday.
You didn't look today.
What? Now, Blanche, don't tell me you spent that money on something foolish.
Oh, no. I gave it to a bookbinder.
A bookbinder? What do we need with a bookbinder? Our book is in fine condition.
Not that kind of bookbinder. This man goes to the racetrack. He's a trout.
Trout? The racetrack? Blanche, Blanche, did you bet that money with a bookmaker? Put the lights on.
Now, don't get excited, John. He brought back the ticket. Here.
Oh, a $50 win ticket. How could you take my hard-earned money and gamble it away on a horse? I work my fingers to the bone, and you squander every penny I make. You never see me betting horses. I never been to a racetrack in my life. What's the name of the horse?
Valdina Rip.
A bum. A worn-out goat that hasn't won a race in Del Mar. Oh, Blanche, why did you do it? Did he win?
No, he ran second.
$50 tossed away. Ugh.
Why are you tearing up the ticket, John?
Because it's no good. I ought to make you eat the pieces. This is the worst thing you've ever done in your life, Blanche. At least you could have played him the place.
Well, don't throw the pieces away, John. What makes you so sure it's no good?
Well, you played the horse to win, didn't you?
Yes.
And he ran second, didn't he?
Yes.
Well, then the ticket's worthless. Here, watch your $50 go out the window there. I knew you had something on your mind.
I'm sorry, John.
What's the difference? Who won the race, do you know?
Yes, I heard it on the radio.
Well, who won it?
Disqualified.
Disqualified?
Yes, the announcer said the winner of the race was disqualified.
Oh! Oh, I wish I was dead.
Good night, John.
You never before dream, yes, never before dream, could any shampoo reveal 100% of the natural luster of your hair. Listen next Sunday for another pleasant half hour with Don Amici, Danny Thomas, Francis Langford, Carmen Dragon, and his orchestra. And now here is
Don Amici wishing you good days, good nights, and good luck until we meet again.